Ciao, and welcome to the Frontier Space Podcast, a dialogue about how space technology and exploration are transforming our solar system.
Andy, welcome to the Frontier Space Podcast.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
How are you and the team over there in Copenhagen?
Good. We're coming to the end of what feels like a very long winter, so I'm looking forward to everyone sort of waking up and getting going on construction sites again.
Nice. It's exciting. Yeah, it's an exciting mission you guys are on with Minimass, and we're wondering what your aha moment was that really inspired you toward this project.
Well, I have been working in the engineering, structural engineering specifically, world for 15 or 16 years as a design consultant. So I had come across a lot of different projects and different techniques for building things, and I had designed many things myself. But there was a moment when I was sitting in a meeting talking with a group of contractors and architects about 3D printing and trying to make the point that we should be designing to suit the manufacturing method rather than trying to use 3D printing to do what we can already do using more traditional methods. So if you're a precast concrete manufacturer, it makes no sense to try and make exactly the same as your precast factory using 3D printing, because it will never be cheaper than this, than the sort of factory system they already have. Whereas if you design something that is specific to the advantages of 3D printing, then there's the possibility to make all sorts of interesting things. So at the point at which someone said, no, you can't do it like that, I thought, well, I'm going to go and do it. I'm going to try and see how far I get to. And there's always that moment where you go off confidently thinking, oh, well, I'm going to prove everyone wrong. Doesn't necessarily work out that way. And of course, these things are never linear. But after a few stabs in the dark, I found myself picking up a sort of golden thread and following it where it led. And here we are a long time later.
Congratulations. And it seems like you've been on the mission for a few years now.
Yeah, so I started my company in October 2021. And I left the place I was working, the Archie Ingalls Group, at that point in September 2021. So I've been pushing Minimass for a little while now, about 18 months. So really, in the grand scheme of things, it's a very new, very young business. But I've been thinking about the way forces work in buildings probably my whole life without even realizing it. And so this is the culmination of years of Lego and all sorts of things, you know.
Love it. Yeah, I remember those Lego days were very, fulfilling almost at that age.
Absolutely. When you can physically represent your thoughts, it's amazing.
Yes.
And one of the things that I rewatched the movie The Matrix the other day, which I'm sure you know that movie. And one of the things in it, of course, is that people can read the screen, the green lines on the screen, and that tells them what's going on. And it occurred to me that structural engineers they do the same, but with forces. When you look at a building or a bridge, you can see the architecture and the cladding. But if you know where to look, you can also see the forces and the behavior. And that's almost my goal, without realizing over my career. That is the goal that I have had for the buildings that I've designed, is to try to show people how the building is working after we've built it. So it's not having more structure than you need. It's not having less structure than you need. It's having the structure in the right places. And then someone who can read that kind of thing can look at it and say, ah, well, of course it's like that. It has to be like that. There is no other possible way it could be. It's obvious. You know, that's, for me, that's the dream with a project. So Minimass is almost taking that approach to a granular level for a single component, but then turning it up to 11. It's the maximum you could possibly have for that type of component.
Awesome. It was really interesting to read about how most of the concrete in the middle doesn't do that much in comparison to the top and bottom.
That's right. It's like the dirty little secret of concrete engineers. Most of the concrete is there to hold the reinforcement in place. So sure, it's doing something. And certainly at different parts of the beam, it has different jobs. So close to a support, it will be resisting shear forces, in which case it's essential. But at the middle of the beam where you have a big bending moment, then it's the purpose is to separate the tension part from the compression part. And in the case of Minimass, we're doing that separation without pouring a whole load of material into the geometry.
And so how should we go about 3D printing concrete?
Oh, well, the industry so far has generally gone down the route of residential construction. And I completely understand the reasons for that, because there's a big market for residential construction. And with a new technology, or relatively new technology for construction as 3D printing, the business case has to come first. Otherwise, there'll be no investment. So there is a clear business case for residential construction. And that's particularly because houses don't need a great deal of structure. They don't have very long spans. They don't have very high loads. They're not very tall. So you can get away with building things which don't have a great structural demand on them. The drawback with printing houses is that you end up making everything a wall. It's like that saying, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, when you have a 3D printing machine for concrete, everything ends up looking like a wall, because it's really easy to make walls, and you don't even have to do much in the way of reinforcement. However, when you're building a house, you don't need concrete walls everywhere. Maybe you need some concrete walls, and of course, in different parts of the world, you need different requirements. Maybe it's seismic, maybe it's wind. The way you design in Florida is different to the way you design in California, which again is different to the way you design in Copenhagen. But if you've got a 3D printer, you end up making everything a concrete wall, because it's faster and lower labor. But from a sustainability point of view, that's not a very good idea, because you've ended up using a structural material with a relatively high embodied carbon for something that didn't need to be structural and doesn't need to have a high embodied carbon. So there is a business case for houses, but I'm not sure yet we've cracked the ability to do sustainable 3D printed concrete houses. So my approach, being a structural engineer, was to do something slightly different. When I look at the companies who make houses, there are a lot of smart construction people and architects and material scientists and robot people in there. But the structural engineering industry or world has not really grabbed onto it yet. So I'm looking at trying to make bigger structures, longer spans, bridges even, using 3D printing. And the fundamental challenge is working with reinforced concrete if we're going to work to the existing codes and standards, reinforced concrete is a challenge with 3D printing because the reinforcement gets in the way of the printer. You can place reinforcement through a layer, sorry, along a layer and across a layer, but you can't place it through a layer. So there's always one axis, if you're talking about reinforced concrete, that is difficult with 3D printing. So I have looked at a few different ways of doing that. The first strategy was to say, don't reinforce. So use the concrete like stone or brick masonry. And then if you can make that work, you can almost make any geometry you like. So that was the first step. And certainly the first physical tests, the prototypes I made were unreinforced concrete with external post tensioning. That was pretty exciting, I've got to say, because no one makes unreinforced concrete. It was a kind of a crazy idea. And yet you can still make bending structures that support whatever loads you design them for using this almost magical approach of unreinforced concrete. It's not always the best solution, though, and that became clear as I started to sort of widen the number of use cases. And there are certainly situations when you need the robustness that reinforcement provides, and when you need the ability to accommodate unknown or variable loading, then reinforcement is a sort of get out of jail free card. So in the end, with Minimass, I've tried to go down two lines, one which is an unreinforced version, and another option which is a reinforced version. And hopefully that means I can cover both when it's appropriate to do one type and when it's appropriate to do the other.
Nice. So we're trying to understand how the 3D printing process works. And it seems like we would take a tether or a wire and then enclose bars around the wire and 3D print in situ.
No, I would say it's more like squeezing toothpaste out of a toothpaste tube. So the material that we use can vary, and there has been a big and very significant step change in material science in the last 12 months, but we'll come on to that. First of all, most 3D printing up to now has been done with a mortar.
Tried you there for a bit.
Okay, where shall I start?
I can't hear you now.
Okay, so the material is a significant thing, and up to recently, most 3D printing was done with a mortar as opposed to a concrete. Mortar being a slightly difficult thing to define, but I'm going to say it's where aggregates are smaller than 2 millimeters, which basically means you're printing with something which has a high cement content and uses sand, but doesn't use stone or aggregate. And in that scenario, it's good for the printer because you don't get blockages, you have a very homogeneous material that you squeeze out of the tube and place wherever you want. The challenge is then modifying the viscosity, the slump of the concrete, so that when you lay down a layer, you can come back and lay down another layer on top shortly afterwards, and the whole thing doesn't fall over. What has recently happened, though, after a lot of R&D from the materials people, is we're now getting to the point where we can start printing with real aggregates. And that opens up a door because, and when I say real aggregates, I'm at the stage now where we're at the 10 millimeter, so half an inch size aggregates. And that's significant because it does two things. It drives down the cement content, because the aggregates take up a larger volume of the material, and it drives down the cost. So by driving down the cement, you drive down the cost because cement is the expensive part of concrete, but you also drive down the carbon in the concrete. So we're getting to the point, and my most recent prototypes were printed with a concrete which is genuinely concrete, performs like concrete, sits within the code framework for whatever it might be, ACI or Euro codes, like concrete, and as an embodied carbon, a bit like concrete, which is a really significant step. And I always started this process thinking, the clever materials people will be working on this, and they'll probably get there sooner rather than later. But I didn't know whether it would be this year, next year, or in 5 years' time. I'm delighted that that we're there so quickly. I think that's a major step forward.
Okay. It's exciting, and understand more now. And we're also wondering why the sawtooth design.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One was I was working with the first prototypes of unreinforced concrete, as I've said, and I wanted to be able to print something using as much printed concrete as I possibly could. So my logic was, there's a certain geometry which I want to create, which is basically a series of struts that separate a steel cable from a concrete flange. Now, the struts in their analytical form are straight, but could be also inclined. The trouble with an inclined strut is that it's quite difficult to print. So printing overhangs and printing at an angle are a bit of a challenge. I wanted to make it as easy as possible. So there is a concept called the constant force truss, which if anyone goes and looks up online, they'll find something related to graphic statics and the constant force truss. And it's a diagram, basically, which shows you a geometry, a truss-like geometry, where you're guaranteed a constant force in the tension part of the truss, and you're guaranteed compression, not necessarily constant compression, but compression in every other aspect. So once you start off with this constant force truss, if you turn it upside down, you end up with a straight part and a whole bunch of inclined struts sticking up in the air. And if you print those inclined struts, they would fall over. So what I did was I enclosed them in a kind of triangular sawtooth pattern, which is easy to print, but also provides some element of load transfer. So if the applied load's not exactly the way I imagined, then the width of the sawtooth provides some flexibility in how the load gets from the concrete to the steel.
Awesome. Very interesting. Cool.
You see, you can print upside down with my geometry. You can print upside down, and that means you've got to, broadly speaking, have a flat surface to print on. And you can print on top of layers, layer by layer. That's no problem. The other way to do it is to print on the side, and that gives different opportunities. So if you print something on the side, then you don't have to have the sawtooth pattern, because now you're printing the perimeter of the beam on elevation. So that implies that these struts that I was talking about, you can actually make the struts now, given a certain thickness, so then they're not going to fail through buckling. But if you're printing on its side and you imagine that the elevation, then you have much more flexibility in that geometry. And what I found is that, going back to the beginning, if I wanted to make a reinforced concrete mini mass beam, then I would end up printing it on its side, and printing the perimeter, almost a shell or a formwork for the beam, which then allows me to place reinforcement. So I have two distinct manufacturing techniques. If it's unreinforced, I'll print something upside down. And if it's reinforced, I'll print it on its side.
It seemed like there were a lot of benefits too with your manufacturing process too.
Yes, and we're really only scratching the surface of what I think is possible. It's funny that I haven't come across a lot of other people doing what I'm doing. So I'm exploring 3D printed concrete from the structural point of view. And so I wouldn't say we're making it up as we're going along, because we're using the codes to guide us, but I'm also using the forces to guide me, without sounding too Star Wars about it. So we know my sort of fundamental principle is that concrete is good in compression and steel is good in tension. So if we can always keep the concrete in compression, then we're winning. I started with the simply supported beam because it's a fundamental building block of structural engineering. You can do a lot with a beam, but it's not the end. It's just the beginning. If you can make a beam, then you can make a slab. If you can make a slab, then you can make a roof. You know, there are all sorts of sort of steps. So starting with a simply supported beam was I think the right idea, but I've also moved on to now continuous beams and cantilevers. Continuous beams being significant because you can make more efficient structures, but some element of continuity also gives you the ability to start thinking about robustness in a different way and seismic performance, which is not significant in Denmark, but of course is significant in all sorts of places around the world. So when I first launched the simply supported version of Minimass, one of the criticisms, or at least comments, was that it was perfectly nice, but not suitable in seismic areas. Yes, absolutely. But once we go to a continuous type beam, then that kind of concern is going to be addressed.
Nice. Yeah, it was really interesting to learn about how your approach can reduce material costs and truck deliveries by 50%.
Yes. So material costs come down because I'm using less material. It's as simple as that. I do want to move towards a lower carbon concrete, and maybe that will have an effect on the unit price of the concrete. But by using less and comparing like for like, it will always be a saving in materials. The question is whether we can generate a saving of the total beam compared to a similar beam in the precast world, or indeed a steel beam. I think we can, because of the reduced formwork costs, as in zero, and the reduced labor costs. Certainly, if there's no reinforcement, then very significantly reduced labor costs. There will be the question of fire performance. That will be significant, and so there might be an added cost depending on the certain project requirements for extra fire protection. But that's the kind of thing you would have in a steel beam, so it's a very well understood type of technique. The number of deliveries, though, is one of the things that contractors I speak to like, because there are two things we can do there. One is, if we fabricate in a factory and deliver to site, typically deliveries of concrete are governed by weight, not size, because the weight of a standard truck before you have to have special permissions is set to a certain number. And because concrete is so heavy, you might get two or three traditional beams on a truck. Whereas if you've reduced the mass by 70% or something of that order, then all of a sudden you can get 5, 6, 7, 8 beams on the same truck. And that has a big impact on the number of trucks. The second version is you decide to manufacture on site. So if you have space, it wouldn't necessarily work in the center of Manhattan, but if you had space in a large out-of-town site, let's say you're building a logistics center or something where there's a bit of space, then you can deliver the printer to the location and fabricate the beams on site. Not necessarily in situ, you would still make them in a prefabricated way, but you would cut out all of the deliveries by making them on site and lifting them.
It's incredible. I think with concrete being responsible for 7% of global CO2, I think this could have a huge impact.
I agree, and the holy grail for reducing carbon in concrete is floor slabs, because something like, people say different numbers, but something like between 60 and 80% of the embodied carbon in a structure, so not cladding or anything like that, but in a structure, comes from the floor. Columns are very efficient, and columns and beams maybe end up 20%, something like that. So if we can find a way to lower the carbon in the floor slabs, then we're really going to make a significant difference. So there is a sort of mini mass slab version that I'm working on. But equally, I like a hybrid system at the moment where we replace the concrete floors with timber floors, CLT floors, cross laminated timber. And we use a mini mass frame so that we can get long spans, but lightweight floors, and drive down the overall embodied carbon.
Awesome. And so if one of us, you know, listening, were to find ourselves building an apartment or industrial or commercial complex, you know, when or how could we use your 3D printing process?
The technology for this improves in efficiency with length of beam, which is a very complicated way of saying it doesn't really make sense to make residential structures using this kind of approach, because in houses you tend to try to avoid beams in the first place, and if you have them, you want them to be as thin as possible because you don't have much head height. So steel beams are the typical approach, if you have any beams at all, certainly in Europe. And if you're trying to compete with a 6-inch or 150mm steel beam, it's not going to be possible using this mini mass type of approach. So I'm basically telling people that when you get above about 6 meters, mini mass starts to be competitive, and anything above about 12 meters, it's really the right answer. Sort of agnostic of other material types, you know, comparing with composite steel floors or steel trusses, all of those things, the costs associated with mini mass will be lower. I'm convinced of that. So the longer span structures are where we would look. I don't yet have my own manufacturing facility, but my strategy for this is to work with trusted partners in the different parts of the world or different countries, and effectively subcontract the manufacture of these to those partners. Of course, we have to deal with different regulatory regimes all around the world. So in the US, we would need an engineer of record for anything which would have to be locally registered. And I don't have registration in all 50 of the US states, or indeed any of the US states. But so that's another reason why I'd be working with a trusted partner. At the moment, I have been talking to a couple of companies in the US and equally in Canada. So there are options there. So if someone did have a project, then they'd contact me through my website, and we'd get straight on it. And the thing that I have found with the people who make 3D printed houses at the moment is they're very interested in this kind of approach because it adds an extra string to their bow with their existing printing facilities that they're currently not using. So finding a printer is it is usually possible, and certainly is one of the jobs that I have been working on.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep our ears and eyes peeled here and any potential opportunities and partners. And where our last question here is, do you think we could apply a similar approach to off-world construction?
Yes, I was hoping you were going to ask me. So, I have had a lucky career, as far as I'm concerned, because when I in my former career as a consulting engineer, I worked briefly, well, for 6 years at Foster and Partners in London, and one of my first projects there was the conceptual design of a moon base back in 2010, which was part of a European Space Agency funded research project. So I did a bit of work on that, got to know the materials and the performance requirements quite well. And at that moment, we were talking about 3D printing or laser sintering, I think actually the technique was at the time, using regolith, so moon dust. But we hadn't, our thinking on structures hadn't developed anywhere beyond essentially igloos, so making dome-like structures. And there's a lot of logic to that, of course, because domes are good in compression. It's possible to build them without formwork. There are all sorts of good reasons why you make a dome, but they're not great for efficient use of space. Because if you make a dome that's tall enough for someone to stand up in, then there's so much space in the dome where people are not able to stand up in it, all around the edges. Later on, I was working at Bjarke Ingels Group, and I started working with them developing some of their work on Mars and the Moon. I think they were working with another 3D printer, a company called Icon in the US. And so I've had quite a lot of exposure to both the Moon and Mars and 3D printing, and I spent a long time thinking about that. So I was delighted when it occurred to me that I could make unreinforced concrete beams, because the fact it's unreinforced means it really is agnostic of material. It could be any compression carrying material. It could be stone. So I've been talking to a stonemason in the UK about making a stone mini mass beam. Very excited about that. It could be glass. It could be recycled plastic. There are all sorts of opportunities. So if there's a way of making regolith, moon dust, Mars dust into a sensible compression material, then we can make mini mass beams on the moon or on Mars. And what that gives you is the ability to make flat structures. So you don't have to have a dome. You could make floors for people to walk on, and that is potentially transformative.
And really exciting, I think. It holds great potential, and thanks so much for joining us here, Andy.
My pleasure. It's been great to talk about this.
And I think you guys are on an important mission there with Minimass, and may the force be with you.
Thank you very much.